The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Is your health optimized? Rather than waiting to develop a symptom or chronic disease, take control of your health with a preventative lifestyle starting today. Welcome to Reclaim Your Health with Dr. Maggie Luther. Living a proactive lifestyle is about creating daily health-promoting habits so you can feel empowered when you take action every day to optimize your health and prevent disease. Now, here is Dr. Maggie Luther.
Hello, and welcome to today's show. In today's show, we are going to be talking about cardiovascular disease, which is a pretty broad topic, and I'll kind of break it down and we'll get into that as the show progresses. But, you know, just out off the base, it's a pretty serious condition, right? So in the United States, it affects over 65 million Americans, and it's the number one, heart attack is the number one cause of death. Stroke is often around number three. Or number four. Those are both included in cardiovascular disease. So it's definitely something that we should be looking into more than, you know, what the standard treatment is currently. The total cost of it, and this is from a statistic back in 2008, so, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, $3 billion. And it was kind of interesting because I heard one person online when I was doing some research equate this to more than enough to cure world hunger, because the World Health Organization says that it would take about $195 billion to cure world hunger. So pretty interesting. February every year is National Heart Month. In my practice, I remind people every month how important preventative medicine is when it comes to cardiovascular disease. So that looks something like, what can you do every day to contribute positively to the health of your heart and your cardiovascular system? What are you currently doing that you could change? Maybe that's not supporting you health-wise. And how can you really optimize the health of your heart for the long term, not just temporarily taking a supplement or drug or whatever, but really transforming your lifestyle to support your heart? So to kick things off, just a little trivia. A lot of people already are well aware of this fruit, but there's one particular fruit that's been shown to help the arteries, and it's got some pretty good research supporting it. So it has been shown to be anti-inflammatory, which is really great because we're really understanding more that heart disease and really most disease has a piece of inflammation to it. So that's really beneficial. It's been shown to lower blood pressure. It has natural angiotensin converting enzymes in it that inhibit our angiotensin converting enzyme in our body. So that's a good thing because that can actually raise blood pressure. It's also shown to have a lot of antioxidants in it, and that probably complements the part of it that's anti-inflammatory. So this fruit is pomegranate, right? And so a lot of people, you know, might be drinking pomegranate juice. And I'm not a huge fan of drinking a lot of juice. I think if you're going to ingest it, the fruit would be best. Otherwise, getting a nice cup of filtered water and then adding a splash of the pomegranate to it would be a good way to go to add a preventative lifestyle piece into your daily life. So when we look at cardiovascular disease, how did we get to the place where we are with heart disease being the number one cause of death and costing us billions of dollars? And we can kind of look at some of the ways it's been treated, right? So for the past 50 plus years, we've been treating cholesterol as the one and only cause, and therefore creating treatments that revolve around lowering cholesterol. We've also commonly gone to the side of saying saturated fats are bad, and not necessarily telling people what types of saturated fats, but just kind of grouping them all together and saying that this will contribute to cholesterol and to atherosclerosis, right? But the most perplexing part of this all is that if we've got so much money going into treating heart disease, why is it still the number one cause of death? Why are heart attacks, which is one part of cardiovascular disease, still the number one cause of death? It's a little odd to me, right? And so I'm going to do a little history lesson here. So this all began with the lipid hypothesis, which was Ansel Keys, and this was in the 1950s. And he proposed to the medical community, after doing research on animals, that there was a direct relationship between the amount of saturated fat and cholesterol in the diet and the incidence of coronary heart disease. And so that kind of became the foundation and framework for treatment of heart disease. However, since then, we've learned a lot about what causes and affects heart disease. And unfortunately, the medical system's kind of still trying to hold on to this only cholesterol picture. What's interesting is that Ansel Keys, in 1991, so, you know, 40 or so years after his original research, he wrote a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine, and he stated that dietary cholesterol has an important effect on the cholesterol level in the blood of chickens and rabbits. But many controlled experiments have shown that dietary cholesterol has a limited effect in humans. Adding cholesterol to a cholesterol-free diet raises the blood level in humans, but when added to an unrestricted diet, it has minimal effect. And so what's interesting about this, and we're going to go into a little bit of cholesterol education, is that we're going to learn that cholesterol is actually really tightly regulated by the body. So we'll get into this a little bit more later on in the call, but your body makes a certain amount and you get a certain amount from your diet. And those two will kind of go back and forth a little bit, but there's only so much cholesterol that can be in the body at once. Okay. Another piece in 2004, the Journal of American College of Cardiology, Sylvan Lee Weinberg, he was the former president of the American College of Cardiology, he said that the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet may well have played an unintended role in the current epidemics of obesity, lipid abnormalities, type 2 diabetes, and metabolic syndromes. This diet can no longer be defended by appeal to the authority of prestigious medical organizations. You know, I don't know if a lot of you remember, but, you know, I was young in the 80s and 90s, but I still remember all the, like, low-fat craze and, you know, everything was carbs and it was, like, loaded with sugar. And, you know, I knew this as a young person. So it's just quite interesting when we start to look at the information that we've been accumulating since we originally thought cholesterol was such a big player. So I found some other research while I was putting this show together. And what is cool is that preventative medicine goes so far for helping us live a truly healthy and well life, right? But obviously you have to have that information in place and be educated about it. So there was a case control study done with about 15,000 volunteers, and they were looking at modifiable risk factors. So you have non-modifiable risk factors for heart disease and then modifiable risk factors. And I'll cover those in just a minute. And what this case control study showed was that the modifiable risk factors were more at play in causing or preventing heart attacks, right? And so the ones they included were smoking, a lab that doesn't often get tested for, so apolipoprotein B to apolipoprotein A1 ratio. And we're going to be talking about labs in a little bit. If you had a history of hypertension, which is high blood pressure, if you have diabetes, if you had abdominal obesity, psychosocial factors. So, you know, they evaluated the more you felt supported, the better off you were. Daily consumption of fruits and vegetables, fewer being worse off. regular alcohol consumption, and they didn't actually quantify, which is interesting because there has been research that has shown that alcohol can be beneficial for heart disease and prevention, and then regular physical activity, and the less you got, the worse off you were. So they showed that these modifiable factors were more pertinent to whether or not you were going to develop heart disease, which is pretty dang cool, right? So they found that 90% of these were attributable risks in men and 94% in women. So let's, you know, change these things, make them part of our lifestyle, reduce risk factors, like if we have abnormal blood sugar or high blood pressure or abdominal obesity, turn those symptoms around, right? And we can really probably change the fate of many people who either have cardiovascular disease or, you know, are lining themselves up to have it. So cardiovascular disease is a broad term. You know, it's given, it's a broad term that's given to most any condition lying in the heart and circulatory systems. So there can be heart disease, there can be stroke, there can be other things within the heart like inflammatory heart disease, rhythmic issues, cardiac rhythm issues, valve issues within the heart. There can be peripheral artery disease, which is affects the arteries and the veins out in like the hands and legs and those areas. So the World Health Organization says that cardiovascular diseases account for most non-communicable diseases, so non-infectious diseases, or about 17.3 million deaths annually. And then that would be followed by cancers, respiratory diseases, and diabetes. And they say that these four groups of diseases account for around 80%. And if we go back to my first show, you know, it's like we have all of these chronic diseases that we're paying a boatload of money for, and kind of, you know, not addressing true preventative medicine, that, you know, if we started to change the way our diet and life was, we could be living longer lives, healthier lives. We don't have to be on a bunch of pills when we get older, you know? So there's a lot that goes into evaluating, you know, your quality of life could be a lot better. And the World Health Organization was saying that they shared four main risk factors, which was tobacco use, physical inactivity, the harmful use of alcohol, and unhealthy diets. And again, you know, unhealthy diets, it's such a poor broad term because people have no idea what that means when it really comes down to it. So, but more to come on that for sure. So just to clarify, I wanted to say that I would, non-modifiable risk factors are things like age, gender, men are at a higher risk until women reach menopause for cardiovascular events, family history, and then ethnicity. And then modifiable is everything that you think of that affects you personally. So high blood pressure, irregular or not irregular, but lipids that might be imbalanced, other labs on in addition to the lipids that might be imbalanced, smoking tobacco, excessive use of alcohol, poor dietary habits, being overweight or obese, lack of physical activity, psychosocial factors, so things like stress or social isolation or anxiety and depression, those have all been shown to increase the risks of cardiovascular disease. Diabetes and insulin resistance, air pollution, and environmental toxins. So given that, you know, the above risk factors are modifiable, it's a wonder why heart disease is still the number one cause of death. And so we have to go back to the drawing board and look at what could we be doing prior to waiting for people to have a cardiovascular event or just allowing them to continue on the path that they're on without helping them stop if they have symptoms that say, oh, you are now making yourself at a higher risk for getting a cardiovascular event in your life, right? So a lot more education needs to go into play when people are younger and they can start making healthy habits. All right, so we're going to go to a break now. And when we come back, we're going to jump into some of the topics about, you know, cholesterol and mainstream treatment that we've been using And then we'll dive in more to some labs and look at what would be more useful labs to be getting tested to really make sure that we're looking at your personal risks of cardiovascular disease and having a cardiovascular event. So stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/worldtalkradio.
Are you ready to learn what it takes to lower your blood sugar naturally? Have you been told you have abnormal blood sugar readings and want to begin a more natural approach to treatment? Are you a diabetic who is looking for alternatives to conventional medicine? Diabetes and prediabetes are largely preventable diseases, which means natural medicine strategies work to reverse them and treat them effectively. Dr. Maggie Luther specializes in treating diabetes and prediabetes naturally. Now you can work with Dr. Maggie, no matter where you live. To sign up for a free one-hour webinar on what your high blood sugar, inability to lose weight, and exhaustion have to do with one another, visit Dr. Maggie's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther. You can sign up and learn more about how you can work with Dr. Maggie, whether you have diabetes or want to prevent it naturally. That's facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther or search Dr. Maggie Luther on Facebook.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to Reclaim Your Health with Dr. Maggie Luther. If you have a question or comment you'd like to share today, please call into 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmaggieluther@gmail.com. That's drmaggieluther@gmail.com. Now, back to Reclaim Your Health.
All right, welcome back. And so now we're going to jump into what some of the newer research, and by newer, I mean, you know, as of this past year, but, you know, back to maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, so relatively newer. What it's telling us and what we should be doing, right? We should be adapting our methods. So cholesterol is not the primary cause of heart disease. Saturated fat and cholesterol do not contribute to heart disease as primary players the way we once thought they may have. So the primary treatment modality are the use of statins, statin drugs. And statins don't reduce the risk of heart attacks for the vast majority of people. And so what we can look at is more of the breakdown of what's going on, right? So people who are pro-statin supporters will tell you that cardiovascular events have been decreased with the introduction of statins. And they're right. They have been decreased. But the question is, by how much? So they've been shown to lower future cardiovascular events in those individuals who already have heart disease. And they've been shown to lower it in people without a history of heart disease, right? And so the numbers, when you look at them, are actually pretty small. So when we look at people who have had heart disease before and when they've been treated for 5 years, about 96% of them don't have benefit from the statins. About 2.6% of them will have benefit after 5 years of treatment. When we look at the people who don't have a history of cardiovascular disease, that 2.6 drops even more. So if we put that into perspective, we would say that you need to treat 60 people for 5 years to prevent a single heart attack. And for stroke, which statins are sometimes used for, you would need to treat 268 people for 5 years to prevent a single stroke. And so what becomes reality is that we need to think about, is that what's the cost benefit for each individual person? It's unfortunately not a blanket place that we live in. Each person's different. Each person has different genetics, lifestyle habits. Everything affects them. We don't live in a laboratory ourselves, you know, and that's testing often is done in a more controlled environment. But during that 5-year period of people who would be on statins, 1 in 67 would have developed diabetes. And then 1 in 10 would have developed muscle damage, because a side effect of statins is often myopathy, muscle damage. And there was a study by Dr. Naveed Sattar and colleagues in The Lancet in 2010, and it was a study that really demonstrated the link with diabetes risk increasing, and they found that statin use was associated with a 9% increased risk in developing diabetes, which is a relative risk, right? So it's not an absolute risk. So, yes. We're going to dive into statins a little bit more, but one other big part of the newer research is showing that the consumption of the so-called healthy oils are actually quite the opposite. So a lot of the polyunsaturated vegetable oils that have been touted as being healthy for the heart and cardiovascular system are actually quite pro-inflammatory. They oxidize easily, and they're not that health promoting. And so we're going to jump into all of these right now. I'm going to jump into the statins first. So, you know, statins are well known for their treatment of what's called dyslipidemia, when our cholesterol lab values are abnormal. And they're best known to lower the quote unquote bad cholesterol, LDL, LDLC, as well as total cholesterol and triglycerides. They've also been shown to increase the good cholesterol, HDL, high-density lipoprotein. The question here, though, still remains that when an individual has a heart attack, 50% of those people will have LDL levels, because they're being treated with statins oftentimes, in the normal range. So if this is really helping us as much as we would like it to be, why do these people have normal LDL levels, but they're still having cardiovascular events? And that's because I just don't think that that's enough treatment. You know, it's like we're trying to use something to kind of band-aid a potential problem down the road. But there's so much more that could be done for it, right? Otherwise, that statistic would be way lower. So, in the research, we've seen that the only population that statins extend the life for are in men under 80 years of age with a pre-existing heart disease, so extend their life. So we're going to be talking about extending life and cardiovascular events, because they're actually two separate things. In men under 80 without pre-existing heart disease, or men over 80 with or without heart disease, and then women of any age, statins have not been shown to extend lifespan. Statins do reduce the risk of cardiovascular events in all populations, right? So there is some drop in cardiovascular events in all populations. It's not huge, but for the most part, they don't tend to extend the life of the individuals, except for that men under 80 that I was just talking about with the pre-existing heart disease. The other part of it, though, is, you know, a heart attack or stroke can have a significant negative impact on quality of life, right? Particularly in the elderly. What's the cost-benefit analysis? If we look at the research and we see that men over 80 with or without heart disease don't benefit from statins for extending their lifespan, but if they were to have a heart attack or stroke and statins reduce the cardiovascular event risk, maybe they're lucky enough to get that small percentage, or be that small percentage, that if they were to have a cardiovascular event or were going to, that statin would reduce it. It's really hard to say, right? So the other thing about statins is they are not without side effects, you know, and I think there is quite a bit of side effects attributed to them. Most often I hear of the muscle issues, muscle pain. And I hear this pretty commonly in my practice. You know, I think there's some statins that cause it more than others. There's also issues with like memory and thinking and concentration. And that's probably one of the other big ones that I hear is just I couldn't focus after I went on this. Some other ones are depression, irritability, sleep disturbances, fatigue, headaches, joint pain, abdominal pain, and then the changing in liver function, which they'll do regular tests for your lab values when you're on a statin drug. So I got to do a little bit more about cholesterol before we jump into some labs and treatment and things like that. But so cholesterol, what is it? Why was this like the primary causative agent that was blamed for cardiovascular disease? And what do chickens and rabbits have to do with humans? But anyway, so the liver makes and packages cholesterol for the body. And 75% of cholesterol on a given day is made inside our body, and 25% comes from our diet. These are not hard and fast statistics, but it's about 3/4 to 1/4. The body actually tightly regulates cholesterol. That's how important it is. So, for instance, they've conducted studies in which they've had individuals eat 2 to 4 eggs in a sitting, right? Because we know eggs are rich in cholesterol. Then they measured their blood cholesterol. And for about 75% of those people, so again, 3/4 of those people, their blood cholesterols will not fluctuate, even though they just ate a bunch of cholesterol in their food. The other 1/4 of those people are what are known as hyper-responders. And in these individuals, dietary cholesterol moderately elevates both LDL and HDL, which means it does not affect the ratio of LDL to HDL, which is pretty important because HDL is cardioprotective. So why such a tight regulation on blood cholesterol? It's because, you know, cholesterol, it's so cholesterol is actually an extremely important nutrient, and it makes all of our steroid hormones. And so it's called a sterol, so it's a steroid in alcohol, if you think about it more that way than thinking about it as a fat. It is the precursor for all of our steroid hormones, so DHEA, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, cortisol. There's a ton more, but we wouldn't be alive without cholesterol, pretty much. So it's something that the body really wants to make sure it has enough of. So if we take this a step further and we look at what happens when your body makes its own cholesterol, since about 3/4 of it comes from your own body's production, we can start looking at how it's made and what happens, right? So cholesterol is packaged into transporters, and the two most common ones that people know about are LDL and HDL. So cholesterol doesn't just float around in your blood. It's packaged into these lipoproteins that carry it around into the in the blood and then distribute it at target tissues. So when LDLs are formed in the body, they originally start out as VLDL, and they're packed with nutrients, triglycerides, the cholesterol, antioxidants, and they drop off these nutrients, including the cholesterol, all around the body. So once the VLDL drops off a certain amount, it becomes an LDL. And LDL have higher concentrations of polyunsaturated fatty acids in their cell membranes. And we're going to talk about fatty acids because they're very important for our health. And the reason for this is this allows for easy transfer of those nutrients and cholesterol that we were just talking about to target tissues. So once the VLDL has become LDL, there's only a small number of antioxidants, if any, if you're eating enough, if you're getting enough, in the LDL particle, leaving it extremely susceptible to oxidation in the blood vessel. And why is that? Because these polyunsaturated fatty acids are unstable. So even though they serve the purpose of allowing the stuff to get from inside the lipoprotein to the target tissue, they're unstable fatty acids. They're unsaturated fats. And so then you've got an LDL that potentially doesn't have much antioxidants. And if it comes into contact with any type of inflammation in the arteries, then it's going to react with it. And so that starts the plaquing formation that exists in the arteries. So the best case scenario is that the LDL makes it back to the liver to be broken down and the parts get reused. And the worst case scenario is that the LDL is oxidized to such a degree in the blood vessels that it adheres to the blood vessel wall. It's engulfed by our white blood cells. And we know that from looking at they've taken biopsies of plaques. And then it begins to form the plaque once it's engulfed in the white blood cells. All right, so we are going to go to a break. When we do get back, though, we're going to be jumping into more about the health benefits of cholesterol, what labs to look at beyond the regular labs that most people get run, and then what to do for treatment. All right, stay tuned.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Are you ready to learn what it takes to lower your blood sugar naturally? Have you been told you have abnormal blood sugar readings and want to begin a more natural approach to treatment? Are you a diabetic who is looking for alternatives to conventional medicine? Diabetes and prediabetes are largely preventable diseases, which means natural medicine strategies work to reverse them and treat them effectively. Dr. Maggie Luther specializes in treating diabetes and prediabetes naturally. Now you can work with Dr. Maggie, no matter where you live. To sign up for a free one-hour webinar on what your high blood sugar, inability to lose weight, and exhaustion have to do with one another, visit Dr. Maggie's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther. You can sign up and learn more about how you can work with Dr. Maggie, whether you have diabetes or want to prevent it naturally. That's facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther or search Dr. Maggie Luther on Facebook.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Class is in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You're listening to Reclaim Your Health with Dr. Maggie Luther. If you have a question or comment you'd like to share today, please call into 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmaggieluther@gmail.com. That's drmaggieluther@gmail.com. Now, back to Reclaim Your Health.
Welcome back. So we're going to jump into some labs and looking at what are more pertinent labs to get tested in addition to what is normally tested. And I hope that you've kind of been getting the idea that cholesterol and atherosclerosis are not just about cholesterol deposition in the arteries. So we will continue opening that can of worms up and looking at it and trying to figure out, you know, if we have all this information, what can we do to use it for our own personal health to become more successful at knowing whether or not we're on the right path to preventing cardiovascular disease. So most people are aware of total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, triglycerides. I hope that you get more than just total cholesterol run at your doctor's office, but sometimes that's all they run. And then they'll look at some ratios. If they do all four of those, they'll look at ratios between HDL and total cholesterol and HDL and LDL. Of those, you know, the medical establishment has long used LDL as the main driver. And that's what statin medications are often used for, in addition to total cholesterol. The thing is now, though, that we know a lot more about LDL. So there's not just a LDL or a HDL. There's different types of LDL and there's different types of HDL. And so it's no longer appropriate to say that LDL is bad. So LDL has, there's LDL with certain size patterns. So there's large buoyant ones and small dense ones. And then there's also how much LDL particles are in the blood, right? So it's less of a risk when the LDL are large and buoyant. It's, so that would be, their size pattern would be A. It's more of a risk when the size pattern is B, when they're small and dense, because those Bs can go around and get trapped more in any sort of inflammation or plaques that already exist. If we look at triglycerides, the higher they are, that's more correlated with the LDLBs. So you can get additional testing run where they'll look at your LDL size pattern, A versus B. And I can guarantee you that correlates with triglycerides. So people who come in and they have high triglycerides and their LDLs are high, those people, when we run the additional LDL size pattern test, have more of the Bs. So that's bad. We definitely want to be working on reducing triglycerides and LDL. If you have triglycerides that are elevated and the LDL size pattern is A, it's less bad, but triglycerides themselves are also a risk factor. So we want to make sure that triglycerides aren't too high above the normal range. So some other labs that are pertinent to get looked at, apolipoprotein with a big B. So ApoB is sometimes what it's abbreviated as. So this is really important for those who have a family history of heart disease. And it's definitely indicated when there's high triglyceride levels, as this, the high triglyceride levels, if your ApoB can mask true LDL calculations. And then there's lipoprotein little a. So this is a measurement of a lipoprotein cholesterol in your body. It's a inherited risk factor for heart disease, and it often does not respond to traditional LDL lowering drugs. We went over the LDL A and B, and then the particle number, so LDL P, you know, how many particles do you have? The more particles, the more dangerous. In addition to cardiovascular disease labs or blood cholesterol labs, you can look at some other labs. So there's HSCRP, which is high sensitivity CRP. And this is a non-specific acute phase reactant. It's an independent risk factor for future cardiovascular events. The Women's Health Study demonstrated that this marker is more important in women than LDL. Another study of more than 1,200 participants, patients did not have an increase in cardiovascular disease risk with an LDL greater than 125, but had a 2.3 increased risk of fatal coronary events with an elevated HSCRP. So generally, when LDL is above 130 without any cardiovascular risk factors, then treatment would start for lowering LDL. Homocysteine is sometimes used as an independent marker. That one's, you know, it definitely can give you a good indication of your methylation pathway and if you have enough folate and B12. It's been one that's been used for cardiovascular disease. I'm not sure it's as strong as some of the other ones that we now have information about. And then there's fibrinogen, which is an acute phase reactant, and may rise when there's inflammation and tissue damage, such as when occurs with strokes and heart attacks. It's not as sensitive as an independent risk factor, but it can still tell you how much the blood is clotting, right? And so blood that's clotting is not going to be a good thing for people with heart attacks or strokes or potentially having one. All right, so that's kind of more labs to look at. There's a few HDLs, like I said, HDL2, HDL3, and more advanced specialty labs you can get these run at. All right, so just, you know, in a nutshell, cholesterol, I think people just have this idea that cholesterol is bad. I kind of already, you know, suggested to you that it wasn't, but it really is so important for the body. It's, you know, makes all of our steroid hormones, like I said. It gives our cell membranes the right stiffness and stability along with saturated fats. Remember we talked about how those LDLs and VLDLs are more made with polyunsaturated fatty acids because it's allowing for nutrients to be transferred. Well, we don't want that in all of our cell membranes. Otherwise, our cells would oxidize because polyunsaturated fatty acids have less – so they have more hydrogen atoms that are unpaired, meaning that they're able to react with different things. That's just basic chemistry. Cholesterol is a precursor to vitamin D, which we all know is very important. Bile salts are made from cholesterol. Bile is vital for digestion and assimilation of fats in the diet. Some recent research shows that cholesterol acts as an antioxidant. It also is needed for proper function of serotonin receptors in the brain. And there's actually a lot of research that has demonstrated that people who have low cholesterol are at an increased risk for mental, emotional stuff, depression, anxiety, irritability. So it's doing some good stuff in there. I'm not sure that we want to mess around with it as much as we are. Fatty acids. So just a little bit of information on the fatty acids, fats, saturated fats. There's short chain fatty acids, medium chain fatty acids, and long chain fatty acids. And so saturated fats are saturated. They don't have any areas where there's an open hydrogen, so they have less reactivity, whereas we have monounsaturated fats where there's one mono area where there's no where there's an open electron, and then poly is multiple. And so depending on the type of fat that we're talking about, you know, yes, we need all three of these types of fats, but we don't need all of them that are out there in the mainstream community right now. So short chain and medium chain fatty acids are a lot better for us. The long chain fatty acids that are really good for us are some of this, the saturated fats, stearic acid. There's a few. Stearic's probably the best one from beef, but the other long chain fatty acids that everyone knows about is like EPA and DHA, which are the essential fatty acids. So those are also good for us. And then the GLA, which is an omega-6 fat, which is really good for us as well. So short-chain fatty acids don't need to be broken down. They're actually really easy for the body to use. Butter has a lot of short-chain fatty acids, medium-chain fatty acids. Coconut oil has medium-chain fatty acids, antimicrobial properties. They are also broken down pretty easily and help to provide us with quick energy, and they help support the immune system. So a little bit about polyunsaturated fats. You know, one reason we've kind of already covered this, why they're so bad, is that they have more places for reactions to occur, meaning that they can easily become oxidized or rancid when they come into contact with heat, oxygen, moisture. So a lot of the vegetable oils that have been touted as healthy are probably actually not that healthy. Vegetable oils, safflower, sunflower, soy, corn, canola, right? So these oils are made from vegetable sources, and they're higher, and some of them are pretty high, and some of them are relatively high in polyunsaturated fats. And so these oils, especially when we're heating them, which a lot of people cook with them, are becoming rancid and oxidized, and then we're ingesting them. Plus, the fats you eat become parts of the cell membranes and all of the areas that your body's using fats for. All right, so we're going to go to break now, and when we come back, we'll talk some about treatment for cardiovascular disease, and we'll wrap up a little bit more about saturated fats and how you can help yourself differentiate between good saturated fats and bad saturated fats. So stay tuned.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Are you ready to learn what it takes to lower your blood sugar naturally? Have you been told you have abnormal blood sugar readings and want to begin a more natural approach to treatment? Are you a diabetic who is looking for alternatives to conventional medicine? Diabetes and prediabetes are largely preventable diseases, which means natural medicine strategies work to reverse them and treat them effectively. Dr. Maggie Luther specializes in treating diabetes and prediabetes naturally. Now you can work with Dr. Maggie, no matter where you live. To sign up for a free one-hour webinar on what your high blood sugar, inability to lose weight, and exhaustion have to do with one another, visit Dr. Maggie's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther. You can sign up and learn more about how you can work with Dr. Maggie, whether you have diabetes or want to prevent it naturally. That's facebook.com/Dr. Maggie Luther or search Dr. Maggie Luther on Facebook. You're listening to Reclaim Your Health with Dr. Maggie Luther. If you have a question or comment you'd like to share today, please call into 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmaggieluther@gmail.com. That's drmaggieluther@gmail.com. Now, back to Reclaim Your Health.
Welcome back. So we are going to jump into what to do about it, preventative medicine, using our diet and lifestyle to prevent and treat when we've got cardiovascular issues as part of our family history or part of our own medical history or current situation. So there's a lot you can do to help your heart. Everything you do in your daily lifestyle is affecting your whole body. So again, as always, I always try to help people think about the transitions they can make. What can I do that will be health promoting versus disease promoting? So when we look at diet and lifestyle, we'll start with the diet. So eating an abundance of fresh fruits and vegetables, the goal would be 8 to 10 servings. And most of those would be vegetables. 1 to 2 servings would be fresh fruit daily, preferably in season. And then 8 servings would be vegetables. I totally challenge you to just rise to that. You know, a lot of people struggle with vegetables. So get creative. There's so many blogs out there these days. Try new recipes. Try making things that, you know, instead of having pasta, use like spaghetti squash or zucchini. It's amazing how you can incorporate vegetables into your meals. We want to be thinking about eating fewer grain carbohydrates, especially processed ones. I don't care if they're whole wheat or whole grain or whole whatever. If you're going to eat a grain carbohydrate, it should be like rice. Preferably your carbohydrates would come from starchy vegetables, sweet potatoes, carrots, squash, things like that. Fatty fish meals a week, for EPA and DHA. So those are those healthy long chain fatty acids that we were talking about, which are also healthy for the heart. And some of the smaller fish are really great because they don't have the bioaccumulation of environmental toxins that exist in our world. So things like sardines or mackerel. Fresh raw nuts have been shown in the research to help with just improving heart health. Almonds, fiber. So getting enough fiber. And if you're eating a lot of vegetables, you're going to have no issue getting a lot of fiber. You can get fiber from vegetables, beans, raw nuts and seeds, whole fruit. And then if you're doing any whole grains in your life, 40 to 50 grams is generally what's recommended. You should be eating a good mixture of protein, fat, and carbohydrates at each meal. And so when you start thinking about carbohydrates, think about vegetable carbohydrates in addition to grain carbohydrates, because everyone just thinks of grains as carbohydrates, but we can actually have a sweet potato as our rice or our starch, okay? Emphasizing more of the monounsaturated fats, so things like olive oil for like dressing stuff, and then things like when we're cooking using like coconut oil or butter, ghee, things like that. All right, so exercise, you got to exercise. If you have obesity, abdominal obesity, you got to lose that. That's a risk factor. You know, work on it. Either get a gym membership or find a commitment buddy or get some tapes to do at home, but you got to exercise. It helps you. It really does on more levels than just cardiovascular disease. Eating healthy saturated fats, right? So coconut oil, avocado, butter, meats that are from good sources, so like grass-fed beef, free-range chickens, wild-caught fishes. You need to check the environmental working group to look at mercury toxicity in fishes and which ones are the healthy ones. Please bring back the yolks in eggs. Oh my goodness, these are so healthy. This is where the vast majority of nutrition is in eggs, is in the yolk. Vitamin D, B12, choline. So please bring those back. Try to get free-range eggs if you can. Doing things to relieve your stress. So meditations, deep breathing exercise. There's so many free resources for audios online. Just search like deep breathing exercise. You'll get so many. I always tell people about them because there's a wealth of them out there. And everyone, you know, vibes with something differently. Get out in nature, get your exercise and your relaxation de-stressor done at the same time. There's lots of great herbs that can be used for cardiovascular health on a regular basis. So garlic can be used either in your diet and lifestyle or can be used as a supplement. Hawthorn's a great cardiovascular tonic. So drinking hawthorn tea or a hawthorn solid extract. Ginkgo is really great. It helps to bring oxygen to areas of the body. It helps the blood carry oxygen better. That's why it's great for memory and things like that. Cayenne, rosemary, chamomile, all of these can be used as your daily diet and lifestyle. Cayenne lemon water in the morning is a great wake me up. Rosemary when you're cooking, chamomile tea. Fruits that have a lot of antioxidants, so the dark berries are really great for reducing oxidation of fats, and they actually help to improve blood sugar because their sugar levels are not that high compared with how much antioxidants they have in them. And then there's some nutrients that can be used for cardiovascular health. So things like CoQ10, the omega-3 acids that we talked about, EPA, DHA. Magnesium is a great one. Let's see. There's some antioxidants. So, you know, having a good food-based multivitamin on hand is a really good thing, especially if you're not getting your 8 to 10 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables a day. So there's a lot that can be done for cardiovascular disease, and each person deserves an individualized treatment approach. And what works for some doesn't work for others. But what does work is approaching cardiovascular disease from a health perspective, right? So when you're young, or maybe you don't have the advantage of being young, but you can be more aware of what you're doing in your daily lifestyle that is positively or negatively affecting your overall health. And if cardiovascular disease is a challenge for you, what is positively or negatively affecting your cardiovascular health? So start taking inventory of this in your diet and lifestyle. And you can change the fate of having cardiovascular disease if that is what you have, or you can prevent cardiovascular disease if that's one of your goals. So thanks for joining me on Reclaim Your Health today. I'm Dr. Maggie Luther. And until next time, I wish you a week, full of health. And spring is right around the corner. I know we're turning our clocks ahead this coming week, which for some that feels like we're losing an hour of sleep depending on where you are, but take it for what it's worth. There'll be some more daylight at the end of the day, which is always a good thing for people. It can be very motivating. Maybe it'll encourage you to get outside and get into nature and take a walk. Maybe you haven't done that in a while. All right, so thanks for joining me this week, and until next week, I wish you the best in health. Thanks.
Thank you again for joining us this week on Reclaim Your Health. Please join Dr. Maggie Luther again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And start creating health-promoting lifestyle habits today.